Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Welcome to Jaguars This Week.
Jaguars This Week.
Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
And Tony Bissell.
Color analyst, Jeff Lagerman.
And Tony Bissell.
And Jaguars.com senior writer, John Osher.
And Tony Bissell.
Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank.
Jaguars This Week begins right now.
Hey there, welcome to Jaguars This Week. Brian Sexton along with this motley crew here inside Everbank Field. And hey, Tony, how about this? Right off of Twitter, Jaguars Insider. Jaguars This Week now on WOKV 690 AM. I'm worried about at Tony Bacelli. He's fired up.
Who said that?
At Jaguars Insider.
Oh, our good friend Ryan Robinson tweeted that. I'm fired up.
You're fired up.
I'm fired up.
Are you fired up?
I'm fired up.
All right. Bring it, folks. Jeff Lagerman's here. Tony Bacelli, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, and Jaguars Insider is actually in the studio right now with his camera out snapping photos. So look for those over Twitter.
Just make sure you get my good side.
Give him an angry face. Yeah, turn around.
You have one?
Yeah.
No. I can turn around.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say. Turn around, Bacelli. Phone number is always 800-355-NFL1. 355-NFL1 if you're listening to WOKV. At Tony Bacelli, at John Osher, at Jags Voice, call Lagerman. Fax him.
Smoke signal.
Yep. From the Nocatee Preserve. That's one of the all-time greats. So here we go. Tony, do you want to lead off, or should we start with a more calm?
Why don't we start with a little recap?
Okay. A recap of you being fired up?
No, just overall. And we can get into why. I think my guess is we're all a little fired up about the situation. Tough situation, I'll tell you. You guys were there.
Yes.
It had to be one of the most torrential downpours anyone's ever experienced.
I've never seen anything like that
I was watching TV, and you literally at one point couldn't see what was going on because it was so wet. And
yeah, and I was looking at that kind of through our Bowden Eye Associates live monitor. And
you couldn't tell what's going on.
Well, yeah, you really couldn't see anything. But, I mean, from our view of the press box, we had no issues whatsoever calling the game.
Right.
You know, obviously they didn't have a squeegee for the camera lens, but it was very difficult to watch on television, and it wasn't that bad there. But, I mean, it was coming down. It was 5 inches in an hour.
Yeah. Exactly.
Something crazy.
Well, the TV guys must have not had squeegees because they had a hard time IDing who was there was a couple missed IDs.
Well, as the fans who watch my pregame video will know, the rain would not be an issue in that game. So,
good. So how come Del Rio didn't throw you under the bus like he did Drew Hampton?
Well, it's I don't think he saw my video.
I mean, with a 10-20% chance of rain that day, to have that, wow.
We got all 20%.
Yeah.
Every bit of it.
It was unbelievable. It was, and so you look at the overall game, Blaine Gabbert's first start, which we'll talk about. But for a rookie on the road in that situation with those elements, what a tough task in front of him. And overall, the positive, if you can take any positives out of a loss, I was actually very impressed outside the four fumbled snaps, very impressed how he handled. And the one thing that we talked about, his pocket presence, I thought he took a giant stride forward in handling himself in the pocket and moving around and staying in there as long as he could.
Right. Yeah, if you hadn't thought in the preseason it was an issue, you probably wouldn't.
You wouldn't even recognize it.
I mean, I think there was one or two plays. But like I said, if you hadn't been looking for it going in, I don't think you would have necessarily said, "Oh boy, he did that on that play." I thought he performed very well.
And that was one of the things I was looking for the entire time. I was saying one of the things I want to see out of Blaine is how he handles the pressure in the pocket, how he handles when a blitz comes. Is he quick to run? Is he getting off his receiver and just trying to make something happen with his feet? Is he trying to run outside the pocket instead of stepping up? And except for one or two instances, I thought he did a great job of trying to step up, move in the pocket, and make a play with his arm. And so that was a positive.
All right. Now we know you want to tee off.
Well, there's a number of questions I have or concerns. One,
let's deal with them.
The run-pass ratio, I understand you have a rookie quarterback. I understand that there are two starting linebackers out, two rookie defensive tackles. Your best player is your running back. But to come out at halftime, and we're arguing before what the exact numbers were, I think it was 24 out of 25 plays to start the second half were were runs. I think that's too conservative. You can't win in today's NFL playing that way. You have to take the handcuffs off. I know the elements were terrible, but the other – they were trying to throw the ball, at least attempt. Third and eight, third and 11, handing off inside, one time to Deji Kareem.
Yeah.
It's almost like you were just hoping that you could win with 10 points.
I think that was it.
Well,
you can't do that, though. You can't win in the NFL with 10 points.
You got to have more balance, you know, and I don't think you need to come out and just start throwing the ball all over the yard. I mean, you still have a young quarterback and you still have a premier back in the league, but you got to have more balance, you know. And I think that early on in that ball game, I think that was kind of the plan, was to have balance. And then you had the sack for a safety, the fumbled exchanges, and – it really, I think, affected the play calling in that game, in which it really –
well, then put him in the shotgun and let's run out of the shotgun.
I said that.
I mean, obviously, he is not comfortable under center in those situations. My guess is they didn't work on snaps with wet balls one time going into the game. They weren't expecting it, but I think that's something you should work on. And so, obviously, it was an issue. It wasn't Brad Meester. The guy's been snapping for 13 years, so a lot of quarterbacks. So the kid, you could see it was going right through his hands. You could see it on the tape. So at that point, you realize it, possibly, you know, getting the shotgun more. You got to throw it around. Even if you want to go to the screen game, I understand that. Do some easy passes. Maurice Jones doing the flat. Some checkdowns. Some easy stuff to help him get in the rhythm. It was not raining in the second half. I know it was very wet. That actually gives you the advantage as an offense, running routes and doing things and putting the defense on its heels.
Yeah, see, I don't think you need that. I mean, I don't think you need checkdowns and screens. I mean, this guy –
you got to throw the ball down the field.
He's a talented player, and if you looked at some of the throws that he had in the game, you know, there was three of them that really kind of come to mind. Two of them were to Mike Thomas, and then one of them was to Jason Hill. And as soon as the receiver was turning around to look for the ball, the ball was there. You know, so
so is it,
you know, they're going to open it up this week. They're not going to have a choice. I mean, they're playing a team in the New Orleans Saints, you know, second in the league and points scored a game. They're going to have to open it up.
So let me just read. I
know
I came
these
prepared.
Numbers by heart.
I came prepared, Logs. I did homework.
That's a shock.
Well, it was actually tweeted by someone. I saw it.
Doesn't matter. Don't give
I got
away.
It too.
That's his version of homework.
That is homework. Isn't that how they do homework nowadays?
Yeah, you do find it that
way. So this year in the NFL in 3 weeks, we've seen more points than any time in the history of the NFL, 2,157. More net passing yards, 23,560.
153 touchdowns.
153 touchdowns. What does that tell you where the NFL is going?
There's no doubt. Look at the team that's coming in here this week.
It is a passing league. Right, you set up the pass with the run. You set the pass up, or you set the run up with the pass.
All right.
And I'm not saying we have to go spread it around, become a all-passing team. That's not who we are. But you have to have the ability. I mean, we have one red zone trip in three games. We are offensively, we are very, very vanilla. And you can't do that in today's NFL, I don't think.
All right, so what's the right mix? I mean, in today's NFL, we always talked about balance being what? 55-45 run? I mean, that's kind of what it's always been around here.
Mm-hmm.
What's the right balance in the NFL today? And John, you go first.
Well, Jack even said today, you know, somewhat to his credit, that balance these days appears to be more passing than running even. And, you know, that's a pretty big step for this franchise, I would say. But, you know, 55-45 pass to run is probably about the minimum that you're going to have in a normal situation. Now, with this team, as good as it is running the ball, this may be one of those teams that can get they can get by with a little less than that.
50-50, I'd be happy
but
with
50-50. But you've got to have the threat of it. And
can you win at 50-50 now?
With this team, I think you can be – you can – in the division we play in – in the way we're built, I think at 50-50, you give yourself a chance to soften up defenses depending on how you call the pass.
It's also when you throw a little bit. You know, in the second half the other day, I didn't have the huge problem with the third down runs as much as never in the second half never running on first down until they lost the lead. With a young quarterback like this, you've got to put him in situations where it's not always obvious he's getting rushed. And it's not all, you know, because any defensive lineman or offensive lineman will tell you, it's a significant difference in a pass rush when you know that other team's about to pass.
And you guys are all talking about numbers. I mean, to me, is the eye test. You know, I don't want to see the numbers. I want to see how it works. You know, and right now it's not working. You know, so obviously you have to kind of get it geared
it's
up
a great point.
To throw the football. And the more that Blaine Gabbert shows you, then the more that that percentage will sway towards the passing game.
Yeah, I don't
game.
Think you'd – I would have no complaints if you saw us not averaging less than 10 points a game, if you saw us moving the ball, if we were getting in the red zone, if we were controlling the clock, scoring points, playing tough, hard-nosed defense, which we are, with an aggressive running attack in that type of flow of a game. But what I saw Sunday – what we saw opening weekend even, which we got away with, was a concerted effort just to say we're not going to throw the ball. We will not throw the ball no matter what. We are going to hand the ball off, and we are going to try to hold on and play. And I don't want to say that Jack and the coaching staff was playing not to lose, but as a fan watching that game and someone who's watched a lot of football, that's the feeling I got watching the game.
All right, we got to go to a break, but I'll just give you this now. You've got the number two offense in the league, and everyone in the room would agree that the Saints are terrific on offense, right? They have thrown the ball 130 times this year. They've only run it 65. They've got a power running attack with a couple of Pro Bowl guards and a Pro Bowl center if Olin Kreutz is still playing at that level. So are they the blueprint of what you want? I mean, is that what everybody should be gearing itself
I want to score. I want to win. Well, I don't care, you know, to Jeff's point, let's get away from the numbers for a second. We have an offense that is anemic right now. And so it doesn't – what we're doing is not working. And so the question is, what do? You better change it
but
up.
But is that the ultimate goal?
Well,
the ultimate goal is to win.
A lot of it depends on the
These
quarterback,
guys win.
Too. If you've got a quarterback like Drew Brees, you can go 65-35, and you can mix in a lot of short stuff and not be always high risk. It's going to – you know, I'd say when Blaine is in his fifth year, you go 65-35, he ought to be able to handle that sort of thing.
That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm not trying to say what they should do this year. I'm saying where are they headed?
Well, you can't wait till the fifth year.
Well, no, but
– No, the rest of the league's not headed that way because the rest of the league doesn't have Drew Brees.
Right.
You're
I'm
right
saying
about
when
that.
He's at his –
But they're all looking for him.
When a quarterback is at the elite level, you can go 65.
Let's go look at another
– a lot easier.
And I know we got to – we'll come back and look at other teams with rookie quarterbacks and what they're doing.
Let's do that. More after this on News Talk WOKV. Well, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 6 Jacksonville location, Stein Mart. More fashion, less price. You take a breath. You ready to pick back up where you left
yeah,
off?
Yeah, let's go.
Go for it.
Well, so I think the best comparison, if you look at teams, because a lot of what people are saying and we hear is we got a young quarterback, no OTAs, which is true, no rookie minicamps, no minicamps of any kind, because of the lockout. And so how much can you put on a rookie quarterback? What can you expect from him? And so let's compare it to Cam Newton,
okay,
who we saw last week, who was not very good. But they opened up the offense. I mean, they throw it around. They try to make things happen. And then Andy Dalton. And, Brian, give us Andy Dalton's numbers.
He's completed 61% of his 88 pass attempts, 570 yards, 6.5 per completion. He's got 3 touchdowns, he's got 2 interceptions, and his quarterback rating is 82.1.
Okay, so nothing great,
nope.
But they're running a balanced attack.
Well, 88 attempts, 3 games, you know, it's almost, you know, 29, 30 attempts a game.
30 attempts a game, which is, you know, historically would be a normal.
But I don't know how those games went. You know, did they get down early or anything like that?
No, the last game was against San Francisco. It was a back-and-forth game the entire time. They won late.
Well, to play devil's advocate, and I definitely think they should be passing, you know, the same way you guys do. Without the rain, I would guess that Blaine would have probably thrown 25 or 26 times yet. I mean, I can't imagine
it
didn't
I agree
cost
with you,
five
but
or six.
That's fine. But
just for argument's sake.
That's fine, but you saw the start of the second half.
Oh, yeah.
The rain, the field was still sloppy, but the heavy rain had stopped.
True.
It was more of a traditional – as far as weather at that point.
It was just regular light rain.
Probably the worst thing that happened.
They ran the ball 24 out of 25 times. I mean, it was literally handoff left, handoff right, handoff left, handoff right, or it was 22 out of 24, whatever it was. Third and long handoff. It was almost – I sat there and watched, and I'm like, we're just going to hope the clock runs out and we win the ball game.
They opened up the second half and ran very well for the first few plays of that drive. And it just seemed like they thought that would continue.
Yeah, but even the couple
–
if you look at the where Maurice got his yardage, it was on 3 plays basically.
They were spooked. They had a rookie quarterback on a wet field, and they got conservative. Now, it's one game.
No, and I'm not going to – so that's not –
And I don't expect it to be that way
on Sunday.
That's
not even my biggest – that wasn't even my biggest disappointment. So it is what it is. And I can actually you can make an argument, as John did, is trying to
– Just for argument's
sake. You could. And you could sit here and I can make that argument for Dirk and Jack and saying, listen, we had a rookie quarterback. It's wet. We had the lead. We have a great running back. Let's see if we can grind it out and make something happen.
Right.
You can make that argument. So then you fast forward and they take the lead and we get the ball back after our defense stops them. And we get the ball back with a minute, 2 minute, 3 seconds, right around there.
62.
We move the ball down. We get to around midfield. Clock stop. We throw a pass to Mercedes Lewis with 35 seconds left in the ball game. And there was no, in my opinion, I'm just a left tackle, but immediately I would have thought you rush up to the ball and you spike it. Immediately. For two reasons. One, it takes away any chance of replay and not getting those yardage.
Right.
And two, it stops the clock with about 28 to 30 seconds. And now you have third down on, what were they, about the 40?
35?
36.
36-yard line. You have 28 to 30 seconds. Third down, minimum you're going to have two shots. You're going to have two plays. That's worst-case scenario. Best-case scenario, you throw another mid-range pass, 10, 15 yards. You run up, you spike it again, and now you have 15 seconds, 16 seconds on the 20, and you have at least two legitimate shots into the end zone. We didn't do that. There was no sense that we had any clue, either on the field or on the sideline, of what to do in that situation. And I sat there going, what are we doing? I mean, I'm yelling at the TV at 2:30 in the morning, spike the ball, spike the ball. And there was nothing happened. And you sit there and go, what the heck is happening here? It's concerning.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351.
They also got screwed out of a couple seconds there because they should have put a couple seconds back on the clock.
Well, they should have put
been like 18 seconds.
Yeah, they should have put it.
Okay, so let's go to that. So then the review happens, and whether it's 16 or 18 seconds, they're going to the review. The play was caught, so the clock should be running.
Right.
They stop it, the review. We're not on the line of scrimmage ready to go when ball is called into play. And so I'm wondering – did we not tell? Was there not a message from the sideline to the team? Here's the play we're going to run. Line up, be on the ball, and the second he calls in, snap it, and let's go.
Right.
And we got one playoff in 16 seconds.
It's indefensible.
I don't know what happened. I mean, you talked to Jack. I mean, what happened?
He offered nothing more to me last night when we did his radio show.
Did we not know the rule?
Everyone else.
Did we not know the rule?
Didn't suggest that.
I don't know if they know the rule. I'm assuming that they do, but I mean, there's got to be more awareness, certainly from the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and the guys that are on the field, because Blaine was calling for the ball, and Brad was still checking protections, and that just can't happen.
It almost felt like
the official stops and is setting the ball and is getting ready to wind the clock, you have to be lined up, and at that point, waiting for the official to put the ball in front of your center and be ready to go, and they weren't. And there's no excuse for that, and they know that. And it's a young quarterback, but still, I mean, if you have a young quarterback, you had time during the replay to kind of get all of that kind of figured out.
You had a whole minute.
And at the very least, you spiked the ball.
Well, than a minute because did we go to a break for that? Did we go to a break for the replay, John?
I don't remember if we did or not.
No, I don't think – I think TV stayed there.
No, we didn't. Okay.
I think the TV stayed there. And so I'm sitting there going, and listen – we're all for the Jags. I mean, we're fans. And so I'm sitting there as a fan, part of the organization. I mean, you want Jack and his staff and these players to have success. I mean, we are rooting for them to win. We don't have to be unbiased. So we are rooting for them. And so in that situation, you get the sense, and I don't want to make this accusation, but we are unprepared. We're not prepared for the situation.
So now you're Joe Namath. I'm just kidding. It was too easy to say.
I'm just saying what I saw on TV. I don't know what happens in the locker room. I don't know what Jack says to the team.
Right.
What happens in there, that's their business. I'm saying from watching football and being a part in those situations before, I have no idea what was going through our mind, the coach's minds. You have to know you have a rookie quarterback that you have to tell what to do. When it's 30 seconds to 35 and the ball is completed, the Mercedes, you should be screaming in the headset to Blaine that spike it. If the headset's not working, there should be someone screaming, running onto the field if you have to get his attention, throwing the making the spiking motion to get up and do that.
You know, the one positive that kind of took out of all of that, you know, is that the way the quarterback handled himself after the fact.
Yeah.
You know, and that he took ownership of that play, took responsibility of that play, even though he's a young player.
He shouldn't, though.
And he meant it.
But, I mean, I like that. I mean, here's a guy that is not afraid to say, I'm the man, and that's my responsibility, even though he's a young player.
All right, folks, we've hit the bottom of the hour. It's time for news here on News Talk WOKB. Depend on it. Fans, you can text BBQ to 72239. That's BBQ 72239. And enter for a chance to win the Sonny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You could hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. We go to the phones here as we start the second half hour of Jaguars this week. Jeff Loggeman, Tony Boselli, John Osher, Brian Sexton, Joe Fortunato. 355-NFL-1, 800-355-NFL-1, at Tony Boselli, at John Osher. So let's just start at the top of the list and go with John in Green Cove Springs. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
You know, after all, and what I heard you say, I hear a real positive. Okay, if Gabbert's saying he's taking responsibility for, you know, that happening and everything, and he's looking at it, well, think of it this way: if it was Peyton Manning already knows what to do, the team wouldn't have had to tell him what to do. So I'm taking responsibility for this happening, and I'm going to make sure it doesn't happen again, just like Peyton Manning wouldn't make it happen again.
I appreciate that.
But that's exactly what I wanted to see out of the quarterback. I mean, it's your offense. You got to own it. And the way he handled it, I thought was outstanding.
Absolutely. But
you know, I'm going to be honest with you here now, folks. I mean, about this kid. The throws that I saw when he threw the ball in that game
huge.
Were – something that we haven't seen here in a long time. And I'm talking a very long time, going back to the Mark Brunell era, where a receiver turns around and the ball is already on the way and almost hits the receiver in the face. That's the type of quarterback you want. And I love what I've seen so far, and I can't wait to see the next go-round.
Jeff, let me ask you a question.
Really, I'm excited.
Jeff, because I agree with you 100%. I'm glad he took the ownership. But was it his to take? Rookie first start? Is it?
No,
I like
look,
that. But
if
my
you're,
question
if
is
you're the quarterback, I don't care what year you are. It's your responsibility to say it's my unit, and I like that. Obviously, he needs to be
Coached.
Handled better, coached better in that scenario. But he's young. The coaching staff should have done a better job. They have said that. And it was an inexcusable mistake, certainly at the end of the game, because, you know, and Joe had brought something up earlier when that ball was completed to Mercedes and they got to the line, it was completed with about 35, 36 seconds left on the clock. They snapped the ball with 17 seconds left on the clock. They didn't put that time back. The ball actually moved when the play clock or the game clock still said 17 seconds left. You know, so in reality, they should have taken the game clock back to 17 seconds, and then the team should have been prepared and ready to go. They should have hurried to the line and spiked it at that point, but it was second and one at that point. Maybe they didn't want to lose a down, whatever.
You only got one down anyways. We
could have been handled much better in more ways than one, and it didn't happen. I mean, there's no excuses.
And again, as Blaine gets more veteran, I don't mind going to the line there and just running a straight play. With a rookie quarterback, I would lean towards spiking it immediately.
Any quarterback, you spike it immediately. Because
not any quarterback.
I disagree. With 35 seconds left, it's going to take time to get everyone lined up and call your play.
You can waste a lot of time spiking. I mean, I saw the Colts do it that way for years, and it was very effective. Not going to the line and not spiking, just running the play.
No, you run the play
but
when you got a veteran quarterback.
Right, when you have a veteran quarterback, that's okay. If it's an offense running at a high level, used to being in the two-minute drive, I don't have a problem with it. But, you know, the rookie quarterback, an argument can be made, you get him set.
Yep.
Grab Alec in Argyle. Alec, welcome to the show.
How's it going, fellas?
Good.
I like to watch the game sometimes for storylines that most people probably wouldn't see. And in regards to the weather and the rain, I understand it was a lot of rain. But as much as NFL franchises are worth and as much money as they put into stadiums, I've seen pictures of our stadium with what looked like Lake Everbank inside of it after a rainstorm, where the water pools down in the bottom, it almost looks like a pond. And I know some people, and I've asked about it, that are familiar, and they say they have pumps and filtration systems that can suck the water out pretty fast. So my question really is there any gamesmanship by chance from the Panthers with that water that seemed to never drain out of that field the whole second half? They were still tackling people and sliding in big, huge puddles, it seemed like, the whole second half just about.
I thought it drained remarkably well, considering
how much
rain they got. I mean, it was...
The pumps can't keep up with as fast as it was coming in the first half, but if you remember, to start the third quarter, the field looked like an island. It was surrounded by water. By the time the game was over, the water had receded back to within a foot of the wall. So, those pumps were working. They couldn't keep up. That rain was that heavy.
Yeah, there are some things you can't prepare for. I don't think it would have served them that much of an advantage anyway.
Amazing to me is that by the time you got into the fourth quarter, in the third quarter, I mean, when you'd step into the grass, I mean, it was, splash, 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 and then by the fourth quarter, that was gone. So it actually handled it, I thought, pretty well. But, I mean, when you had 5 inches of rain in an hour, you can't do anything about that.
Right.
And once the field started to drop.
People showed the sides very well. I couldn't see the sides, so I couldn't see it draining off the sides.
Yeah, no, it did.
And even on the sidelines, if you noticed, when it started to drain off the field, the Panther sideline was still well underwater.
Oh, yeah.
Even after the Jaguar sideline was, the Jag side was drier.
Well, it was kind of hard to tell because we were sitting right over top of Carolina Panther sideline. But I mean, the crazy thing is, I don't know if anybody had a chance to watch Jaguars All Access, and that Harry Skull does the
images
of the week, and there was a couple shots in which they were carrying Josh Scobie and Blaine Gabbert. They didn't have the picture of Blaine, but they had a picture of one of the linemen carrying Josh Scobie on his back to get from the tunnel through that little ring of water around the field and then out onto a dry surface so he could keep his kicking foot dry. I mean, that pretty much said the story of it all, and some of the pictures that he had there at the end of our show were, I mean, it really captured the moment, I thought.
Sensational stuff. Appreciate the phone call, Alec. We grab Cliff in Ponte Vedra next. Cliff, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Glad to have you. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'll tell you what's on my mind. I watched the game on Sunday. I've been a Jaguar. I'm born and raised here. But let me tell you something right now about what's happening. And you guys can sugarcoat it. You can do anything you want with it. What's happening is the team completely lacks leadership. And Jack Del Rio can step up and say, oh, yeah, this or that. But look, in business, if I have seven components, just like in football, you have seven different operating units, eight, whatever they may be. Listen, if ticket sales are sagging, then he should strap himself to Jackson DeVille and jump off the stadium with him. Hey, let's generate some revenue. If the offense is not being coached properly, then he needs to start calling the offensive plays, and he needs to get involved. If the defense isn't cutting it, then he needs to do that too. If special teams isn't working, then damn it, he needs to do that too. He sounds real disconnected to me in a strange kind of way that tells me he's taking two steps back, period. And I don't rely on my managers only so much to get the job done before I step in, take control, take responsibility, and tell everybody about it. It's not where we've been, it's where we're going, and we're not going there with him. He needs to completely understand that. And when I listen to you guys, everything from the rain, look, the rain saved us the other day. Those guys the game would have been over in the second half if it wasn't for that rain. It only screwed them up, not us. We were going to play that way anyway, okay? That's because we lack leadership. Guys that get out and do it and not talk about it. And I'll take your response off air.
Cliff's a little fired up.
Yeah. Did he ride in with you?
He's my neighbor.
Yeah, he might be. He might be.
Well, listen. At the end of the day, the way the NFL works is the buck stops with the head coach.
You bet it does.
And so, Cliff's point, is right on in the sense of, if you're the head coach of this franchise, which Jack Del Rio is, and he has said himself, to his credit, that this is a production business. That is his quote. It's about wins and losses. It's about executing. It's about getting things done. And so that's why, when things don't get done, the first guy who gets fired is the head coach. And I'm not saying that that needs to happen. It's only three games in. We were 1-2 last year, and we strung a lot of good games together and had a chance to win.
8-5 November or December 20.
And had a chance to win the AFC South, so that's probably premature. But Cliff's right. I mean, at the end of the day, all the responsibility, the management of the clock, understanding the end-of-game situation, the game plan, where you go as a franchise, heck, how you how your players present themselves is all indicative and reflective of the head coach. It's his job.
Correct one thing he said, though. He said it wouldn't matter whether it rained or not. They were going to lose. No, he was way off base on that. Because
well, I think what he's saying, if you
they would have thrown the ball more.
You know, that, but I think what he is saying, if you watch the game, and this is just from TV, and I haven't watched the coaches tape like Jeff has, is there was a lot of wide-open Panther receivers that he is assuming, my guess is, would have been completed passes if without a wet ball or if Cam Newton was playing, had any accuracy at all. I think that's where his point was. I'm not saying I agree with it. No, I'm just saying that's what his point was.
Okay, but he was pushed pretty well. I mean, the Jaguars did a nice job covering the receivers.
I'm not saying, but if you just from the TV copy
right.
of watching the TV, you guys were there, so you can't see the entire thing. But from a fan's perspective, what he's saying is if you watched it, and it's not always accurate because sometimes you watch the coach's tape and you can see the bad throw was forced by pressure in Cam's face, which it was a number of times.
Yep.
But there looked like there was guys open that were just overthrown.
Well, we spent a lot of time talking about the offense. You know, we need to spend some time talking about defense and certainly special teams that certainly were not very good.
Let's do this
on Sunday when we come back.
Yeah, we need a break. Let's take it now. When we come back, we'll talk about defense, special teams. And then hour number two, we'll look at Carolina and the rest of the National Football League. Well, New Orleans, I should say, and the rest of the National Football League. You're listening to Jaguars This Week on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Become a part of Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, JaguarsAdvantage.com. All right, Logs, you want to talk about special teams first or defense?
Let's start with the defense, you know, because, I mean, everybody really wanted to talk about the offense and lay all the blame on them at the end of the game. You know, defensively, there were seven opportunities in which they had their hands on the ball in that game.
Could have been a bunch of picks.
And didn't come up with any. So seven potential interceptions. Now, I'm not saying they would all be easy. I mean, there were a couple
the diving
of
one by would
have had to have been spectacular. But then – yeah, missed sacks. Jeremy Mincy certainly had an opportunity on a sack caused fumble in which he tried to just grab Cam Newton. And I don't know why he did.
Why didn't he try to blow him up?
Before that in the game, he had actually grabbed a hold of Cam Newton and he'd gotten away. And so I think Mincy's thought was, I can't let him get away this time. I've got to make sure I get a hold of this big guy.
Gosh, I thought he was going to blow him up.
And really, I mean, he had an opportunity to just, you know, break an arm, get the ball out, you know, a chance that it may be a turnover at that point. Didn't happen. You know, so, I mean, defensively, there were some opportunities out there. I think that the front seven or eight, if you want to consider the safety in the box against the run, I mean, held the Carolina Panthers to kind of par for the course of what they've been this year. Special teams, I mean, Matt Turk is
– are you surprised you're going with him again this week?
He's got a one-week audition in my mind.
He's kicking to Darren Sproles, who had a 76-yard punt return against the Packers.
Against Green Bay.
Night.
Yeah. And
you love punters.
Well, I love good punters, you know, and right now he's not a good punter. You know, in that ball game, you know, he had the drop in which that drop led to 3 points.
Yep.
If you take those 3 points off the board, even from the 36-yard line, the Jaguars are looking at a game-tying field goal to send it in overtime.
Great point.
And then later in the ball game, after a third and one in which the Jaguars had a fumbled exchange, they had to punt from the 44, I think it was. He kicks it in the end zone and doesn't even give, you know, the coverage team a chance to down the Carolina Panthers back. Now, it didn't cost him anything, but still, it could have resulted in better field position for the offense there. And then he had like a 40-yard punt with no hang time that resulted in the longest punt return since when, Brian?
Since December of 2008.
I mean, that's just not good enough.
Did they bring any punters in this week to work them out?
No. We're not privy to that.
I don't think so.
And on some teams, that wouldn't be just crushing.
No, but I mean, this team, absolutely.
This team is so built on, I mean, you hear it all off season when I got here, that special teams, they take it more seriously. They sign guys. They want to win those battles, and they believe they have to be competitive and to win. And when this team's not, it strikes a bigger blow for this team than it does some teams.
And now you have two of your best special team coverage guys out.
Osgood practiced today.
Did he practice?
Yeah, so he should be back. I guess since you bring it up, the Jaguars have to completely rewire their personality in order to compete in the modern NFL.
Well, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with emphasizing special teams the way they do. I mean,
but relying on it so heavily.
Well, I think they've relied on it heavily because
they've been a defense and running game.
And in 09 and 08, I mean, 09 and 010, I'm sorry, I think there was an awareness that you didn't have the roster talent and the depth
right.
that other teams did. So that was an area where you could compete and win quickly.
And what I'm saying is that if you're talking about going forward and playing like the Saints or playing like the Colts or playing like the Bills, averaging 38 points a game, you've got to change your focus. You've got to rewire yourself.
Well, you don't need to rewire the way you approach special teams.
Right, you can still be good on special teams.
You still want to be the best that you can be on special teams. And certainly the one area that they've got to be better, obviously punting, but Josh Gobe's been money so far. I mean, he's got a new holder. He's, perfect on his field goals.
He's been outstanding.
I mean, he has been jam up his touchbacks. You know, you'd like to have a few more.
Right.
Deji's got to be better as a return man. I mean, we saw some electric returns in the preseason. We saw him last year. We haven't seen it yet.
Of course, you want to be as good as you can on every phase, but what I'm saying is that you can't have it hurt you as much as it does this team when field position is at advantage.
Well, I mean, for this team, I mean, you got to, with the way they're playing offense, you know, the style, you've got to be unbelievable.
Right.
Well,
that's got to change.
Our margin of error is very small.
And that's what I'm saying is that's right. going to change.
That's the critical thing. Our margin of error is very small. The way we have scored 29 points, the Saints are averaging 30 a game.
So what we need here.
It's stat time.
I got that from somebody.
Well, what we need here, and we talked about this, is you're totally transforming the way that the Jaguars play the game on offense.
Over time, sir. I mean,
we talked about this in the pregame last week.
The Colts don't concern themselves, or, the Colts of old, or the Patriots, or, probably even the Packers. When it's easy for you to complete a 15-yard pass, you don't worry that much about the 15 yards on special teams. But when that's a challenge, then that 15 yards becomes very, very important. Now, it's important to everybody, but it's
a 90-yard field isn't as much to overcome for Peyton Manning as it is for most.
Right. It's significant. I mean, I covered the Colts for 10 years where they really didn't, concern themselves at all with special teams.
Now, there were two other things in that game that, obviously didn't like the end. Nobody likes the end. I mean, that was just poor management overall. The gamble, which I considered a gamble, to go for it on 4th-and-1, and at that point they had the lead.
Talking about at the 50-yard line?
Yeah. Oh, my.
After the four.
Oh.
Miscues on the snaps.
I said on the radio broadcast, I said, oh, no, you got to punt it here. I mean, you got the lead in the 10-8 game. Why would you risk giving up momentum and field position? And Gabbert got stuffed. I mean, at the beginning of that play, and then great individual effort. I give him credit. He kind of fought back. The other play that I wasn't a big fan of in the driving rainstorm, they tried to throw the double move deep ball down to the right side of the field on the Jaguars sideline.
That one, Jason Hill?
Yeah, the conditions just don't dictate that, I like the play design, but not when it's Noah's Ark is starting to float.
All right, we've reached the end of the first hour of Jaguars this week. Lots to talk about as we roll towards hour number two. 355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more, get better. We're back with another hour of Jaguars this week on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. All right, here we go. Hour number two, Jaguars this week from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. We got a couple callers on in the first half. We'll do a better job of getting more callers on where it fits in the second. So let's start with Ronaldo in Hillside, New Jersey, with a thought on wide receivers. Hello, Ronaldo.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's going on?
Not much. Hey, Logan, man. I don't know if you remember, but we spoke, and you said that watch out for Jamar Newsom.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah.
And, hey, he here. So how am I watching out for him?
hey, Ronaldo, I didn't mean, watch out for him. Like, he's going to be a star this year.
He was saying watch out. He might be moving to New Jersey.
I'm saying watch out. I believe that this young guy has got a future. Now, I'm not saying that he was going to be the answer to the wide receiver position, but along those same lines, how do you evaluate the wide receiving group as a whole anyway?
Right.
How I evaluate them?
No, I'm saying how does anybody?
Well, I'm giving you like in my opinion on how I evaluate these wide receivers, just my thesis on them. They need help. You know what I'm saying? Like you got two wide receivers. Like I said, Mike Thomas, he's a two, maybe a slot receiver. You know, quick type guy, good hands, defense. And Jason Hill, you have more mouth than really what he proves. And like you look at the stats for everybody else, they really haven't been in the offense.
All right, Ronald, we appreciate it. And it gives me a chance to jump in here and give you some numbers. We have talked about, is it the quarterback that makes the receivers or the receivers that make the quarterback?
Quarterback's got to come first.
All right, well, and here are the numbers that prove it.
Look
right
at Drew Brees. I mean, looking at his numbers ought to tell you, look at his wide receivers. Yeah. I mean,
the four of us.
Devery Henderson, Lance Moore.
Let me give you these numbers.
Run a little
There was a story in the Wall Street Journal this morning about Wes Welker that prompted me to go look. Because, you know, Wes in three games has 31 catches for 458 yards and four touchdowns. That equates to 165 catches, which would break Marvin Harrison's record from 02, to 1,848 yards, which would break Jerry Rice's record from 1995. Here's the story. So I went back and looked at 04, 05, and 06 when he was with the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
Ready? He caught passes, 96 passes for 1,121 yards and one touchdown in all 3 years.
All three seasons.
Here are the quarterbacks, though. A.J. Feely, Jay Fiedler, Sage Rosenfels, Gus Frerotte, Dante Culpepper, Joey Harrington, Cleo Lemon. Now, in his first year in New England with Tom Brady, Wes Welker, who did nothing in Miami, 112 for 1,175 and 8. Year 2, 111, 1,165 and 3. Year 3, 123, 1,348 and 4. So he joins Harrison and Rice as the only players in NFL history with three consecutive 100-catch seasons. And, of course, he's on pace for his fourth in 5 years. So the point is who was Wes Welker? Undrafted. San Diego grabbed him. He went to Miami when he was let go from their practice squad there. Was as average gets with six different quarterbacks. He gets Tom Brady, and now we're talking about a Hall of Fame receiver.
Yeah. So
how digest do you, those.
So, I mean, until you get Blaine Gabbert, you know, with the ability to throw the ball, to drop back and let that arm go, how do you grade the wide receivers?
That's my point. You
can't.
Is Mike Thomas talented enough that we could say that he's at least as talented in his third year as Wes Welker was in his?
His numbers are better.
Well, yeah. Well, almost the same. Actually, the yards are better because in his third year, actually his first year, 04, Welker was just a punt return guy. In his second year as a receiver, 67 catches. Last year was Mike Thomas's second. He had 66. Welker had 687, and Mike Thomas had more than 800.
Mm-hmm.
And Welker had one touchdown in his second season as a receiver, and last year Mike Thomas had four. So how much better is Mike Thomas when he gets a
quarterback?
Yeah, right.
And he's got one.
Right. I guess that's the point I'm making.
No, and it was a great point.
Do they need a Justin Blackman? You bet. Everybody needs that one.
Yeah, who wouldn't want that guy?
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is if you say that there's no talent there, I say look at Wes Welker.
If right now, I mean, you gotta throw the ball to find out what the wide receiving core is. You know?
You're absolutely right.
I don't know how else to say it.
And they do, as a group, need to catch the ball better. I mean, there's no question that there have been too many drops from that position, and I would expect as they get used to working with Blaine, I would expect.
Well,
that
Jason
to
had a drop on a slant route,
which was a
Jason
which
Hill
would have been a big play.
Would have been a real nice game.
Right.
I mean, hit right there where he needed to be
on
hit.
On time.
Who else had a drop?
Mike Thomas, but it ended up being offensive pass interference, anyways.
Yeah.
No, he caught that.
Oh, did he catch that one?
Yeah.
No, I think
Shorts have a drop?
He was coming out of his break and
maybe
Shorts had a drop against the Jets.
Okay.
Over the course of the season.
No, I know. But I mean drops are gonna happen.
Sure.
You know. And I wouldn't say
guys, we can't even judge
had a
it's
high
impossible to
drops.
Judge the receivers this year. We haven't thrown the ball
right.
This year.
That's gonna change.
I mean it's impossible.
Yeah. We'll start evaluating now. I mean I fully
You really think they're gonna open
really
it up?
Do. I really do. After this week? I mean look here we are on
Wednesday. I just want them to have balance.
I don't see it.
That's all I want.
After this week, they will. What do you say?
Yeah, I think they will.
Yeah.
I do.
So when you say they're going to open up, what does that mean?
I've only been here a few months. What do I know?
No, I'm asking.
Okay, well, what did he throw? How many times did he throw 22, 23 times? I think he throws the ball 30 times on Sunday. Look, here's why I say that. because
he's going to have to.
Yes, because the Saints.
Because the Saints are going
to
score.
The Saints
That's
have averaged 35 points a game. 34.7 to be exact, which is second most to Buffalo, which still blows me away, right? The only team that's beat them this year has scored 40. The only team that's beat them, the Packers, scored 40 points to beat them. This as good as much improvement as this defense has shown, you're not going to keep them out of the end zone. You're just not. So this really isn't about the defense stopping Drew Brees. This is about how many points can your offense score. The defense needs a takeaway, good field position.
So you're saying we need to score more points this game than we have in the first three?
Yes. I'm saying you don't beat these guys unless you score 32 points.
I mean, bare minimum, you have to score more than they do to win. I mean,
they average 35.
Make sure you write that in the ozone because that right there is a treasure.
So what I'm saying, all right, so maybe I should say 36 because they're averaging 30, or I should say 35 because they're averaging 34.7. But so this is about offense this week. So that's why I say absolutely they're going to open up. They have to. You can't grind. You know, you can't grind the meat against these guys. The league isn't set up that way, and that's what I was talking about at the end of the first hour.
The rules are set up for.
Throw the ball.
Football.
And that's what I was talking about when I talk about rewiring is that we have grown accustomed to the fact that this is a franchise that since you guys were a passing offense in the late 90s, this has been a play great defense and let Fred and Maurice run the ball and grind the meat.
But there was no question when they drafted Gabbert that was the first step toward.
And that's what I'm saying.
You're going to see more and more, the linemen they draft to play offensive line are going to be more – pass protectors. You're going to see them surround
Will Rackley, who was a left tackle in college, of course.
You have to gear toward that, but you can't do it all
at once
in one draft, in one free agency period.
But what we're going to see, and what everyone who's listening needs to know is that over the next year or two or three or five, we're going away from run the ball to throw the ball. This is going to be a passing team. That's why they have Gabbert. So that's the rewiring.
Absolutely.
People's mindset has to change. They have to understand it. And the hard part is...
understand it. I think they're clamoring for it.
Yeah, right. But they have to understand that it means there are going to be interceptions and there's going to be some losses here with this rookie quarterback throwing it 30
times
against
that's
Greg
normal.
Williams. How about this?
I don't think anyone questions that.
Okay, but how are they going to be next week if he throws four picks, right? I mean, are they going to be patient and understanding? Because here's what you're asking for.
If he throws four picks and 15 passes, it's going to be a problem. But if he throws four picks, he throws it 40 times?
Right out of the gate. Since Greg Williams went to New Orleans, they have held the opposing quarterback to an average rating of 77.6. So you know that opposing quarterbacks don't have a lot of success.
And I promise you, Greg Williams is going to blitz getting off the bus.
13 touchdown passes last year, which is the fewest in the NFL, and they had 34 picks. Over the last 2 years.
So what are you trying to say?
What I'm trying to say is, here's the deal. He's going to have to throw the ball because that's where this franchise is going. But he's going to make mistakes because he's a rookie. So as you want to see this thing change, to open it up,
but I'm not
be
sure
patient and understand that you're going to have to
patient.
Put up with some of that.
I am patient. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced.
28 picks his rookie year.
I'm not convinced they open it up this week.
They have to.
Just another note on that. Tanya from the Times Union wrote a really good story today. They basically talked about Greg Williams against rookie quarterbacks.
Yep. I saw those numbers.
15 interceptions and two touchdowns in, I think it's 9 games over the last couple of years when the Saints have played rookie quarterbacks. So it's a challenge. I mean, it does not on paper match up well.
But they're going to do it anyway.
Right.
Because A, it's the NFL. B, it's been everything everyone wants to see. And C, all I'm saying is, buckle up, people, because we're going to talk about interceptions and a rookie quarterback.
I'm going to take the other side here, which I agree with that's where they need to go. But if you're sitting in the offensive coach's room game planning to try to beat the Saints, because you're trying to win a game at the end of the day, that's what you're – are you sitting here saying with the numbers you just said, with who you're playing and how Greg Williams is going to play in a very aggressive blitz style coming after your quarterback – that they're going to drop back and throw it a bunch? I think they do just the opposite. I think they're going to try to grind it out, shorten the game.
There's no way.
Run Maurice Jones-Drew. Yes, they'll throw more than they did last week, but I don't see this wide open attack all of a sudden.
He's not going to be Peyton Manning or Drew Brees.
I'm not saying it.
But compared to where they were last week, it's going to seem wide
open. Compared to where they were last week, a Pop Warner team throws more than that. I mean, my goodness.
I've got three boys in Pop Warner. Trust me, they don't throw that much.
That's hyperbole. I was joking.
Yes, I know you have hyperbole inside of you. What I'm telling you is that they have to open it up, figuratively speaking, and throw the ball.
They're still going to be...
Do you doubt that Drew Brees is going to score.
It's not.
This
that's
week.
Not. I hope that he doesn't. I hope he throws 15 picks and somehow and all the seven drops we had last week.
When
we make we make the
that?
Catches. Well, I don't know when I've seen him, but I hope Mincy finishes because he's rushing the passer. I hope he gets home and he knocks him out. You know, I don't want Drew Brees to get hurt for any longer than one game, but I hope in the first quarter we hit him so hard he can't play till next week. Here's I mean, that's what I'm hoping for because that's our best chance of winning and run the ball and play action pass and obviously throw more than we did last week. I just don't – it'll be such a – guys, look at the first 3 weeks of how we played football. I see it a big jump to all of a sudden going from that style to opening up.
But going anywhere up from there is going to seem like opening
it
up.
Yeah, but that's
not opening
up. But
if he throws it 30 times, is that not opening it up?
No.
I mean, what's opening it up to you then?
That's a little open.
Yeah.
That's not opening it up.
It's a screen
door. So if you have,
it's not Drew Brees who throws the ball 40 times
so if you
a
have,
game.
If you have 65 plays in a game, you're 65 to 70 plays, whatever that number is, I mean, 30 is...
By your own definition, opening it up is not running the ball 22 times out of 24 plays.
Yeah, that's my...
There you go. That's opening it up this week.
No, it's not opening up. We're talking about, I think we're going to get more to balance this week, not opening it up.
I sat here across from the coach last night, did his television show today. I think they're going to throw. I don't think they
have any choice. We have to ask Dirk, because Dirk is the guy who calls the play.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, according
to... Yeah, right, right. Although I'm guessing that the coach this week, you know, will have an answer if they're conservative.
Okay. I'm just saying. I'd be curious what Dirk said.
All right. 3-5. None of us have you heard from Dirk this week?
Have not. We expect to get him tomorrow, perhaps.
All right, here we go. All right, let's take a break. More to come. Jaguars This Week resumes right after this on News Talk WOKV. Welcome back, Jaguars This Week. Grab a couple of phone calls here, and let's take Wes in Middleburg up next. Hello, Wes.
Hey, guys. Enjoying the show as always. But I tell you, as a Viper Toe Maverick, that just about takes care of the flyby, so I'm not going to talk about that conservative game plan from Sunday. But what I do want to talk to you about is Gene
Smith. I like
Smith.
the Top Gun reference.
Yes, for you, Jeff. But anyway, what I want to talk about, guys, is Gene Smith, if he can get us where we need to go to. And I'm going to tell you what I'm talking about. The team right now is the team Gene said he was going to build. He said, I'm going to get a bunch of base hits, low ceiling, high floor. And when you look at the players he's brought in, we got a lot of steady Eddies, or good guys, but they're kind of like just steady players. I mean, when I hang up this phone and take your response off there, I want you to tell me any real playmakers he's brought in outside of Mike Thomas and maybe Campman before he got hurt. And then the other thing you got to think about is we really need a receiver. And when you think about good guy playmakers, there's a lot of quarterbacks who are good guy playmakers. They're good guys that make plays. Running backs, you know, a good bit. But what's the one position where it's hard to find a Gene guy? Wide receiver. They're always problem childs, almost all of them. Even a guy like Fitzgerald, he's still a little bit of a, you know, a vocal
no,
guy.
No, he's not. You're wrong there.
Andre Johnson.
Andre Johnson is a great guy.
Reggie Wayne.
Larry Fitzgerald. He is a great guy. Wes Welker.
Jeremy Maclin.
I can go down the list of great guys who play that
position.
The
bad guys get more publicity. Yeah. But
well, I'm still saying it's going to be harder for him to find a wide receiver. So I just want to take your opinion. Because we seem to be built where he said he was going to build us, and we don't have any playmakers, but we got a bunch of good, steady guys. I just want to see what you guys think about it. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thank you, Wes. I mean, go back and look at the draft. Start for the first draft overall. Starting left tackle.
Right.
Starting right tackle.
Right.
Or starting guard. Whatever you want to call Evan Britton. Didn't really like that this past week. Terrence Knighton.
He's a dang good player.
Derek Cox, starting corner. 8 interceptions.
Led your team each of his first 2 seasons.
Mike Thomas.
Yep.
Tyson Alualu.
And if you look at Mike Thomas's numbers, they would compare to guys that were drafted way ahead of him.
I'll give it to you. There's 3 receivers that are ahead of him right now in terms of catches from the 2009 class, and they are Jeremy Maclin, Percy Harvin, and Hakeem Nicks. He's ahead of Darius Heyward-Bey, who was a top 10 pick, Michael Crabtree, who was a top 10 pick, Kenny Britt, who was a first-round pick, and Mike Wallace, who was a sensation last Sunday night for the Steelers. So Mike Thomas is a playmaker.
Okay, sticking with this 09 draft, Zach Miller, jury's still out.
Yep.
Rashad.
A lot of potential.
Made the play, by the way, on Sunday.
As I said,
out the block for Mike Thomas.
We got to see more from him. Rashad Jennings, last year.
Book's still out, though.
The book is still out, but the guy was good last year.
The book is still out.
Now he's on IR. Okay? Look at the 2010 draft class. Tyson Alualu.
I worry about Tyson, though. not from the standpoint whether he's good or not. And, Jeff, you watched the tape. Watching the game, it really looks like he's favoring.
Looks like he's not 100%.
Not even close. Now, he played great. I mean, two tackles for loss. The guy's an absolute stud. What would he be, though, if he didn't have his
knee brace
right now? Because he's definitely favoring that knee.
DeAnthony Smith?
Jerry's
hurt.
Who knows?
I mean, torn Achilles, the first padded practice.
You can't do anything about that.
What do you do? Larry Hart?
Gone.
Fifth round guy. He's gone. Yep. Big deal, right? Austin Lane? Quality backup, maybe the potential for more. Plays hard.
The way he's
plays
drafted,
smart.
Too, has also caused this kind of a call. Meaning, when you go left tackle, defensive
wrong with
tackle,
left tackle.
No, there's nothing wrong with it. But it's not going to excite people, but it is how you build
the
winner.
But here's what the theme is. Big guys.
Build.
Big guys. And then guess what comes next?
Quarterback.
And guess what comes next?
Quarterback.
Playmaker.
Big-time playmakers. Yep. And you can't do it all in one year when you had 7 years. Am I right? 7 years?
Well, I was going to say, one of the things
incompetence.
The other thing we got to remember, and Gene's taking
6 years. 6 years.
Gene's taking a lot of heat, and people are questioning his draft picks, which is fair. That's the part of the position you get, and I think Gene understands that.
He does.
But he had to rebuild a foundation –
right.
Of a franchise that was decimated. And I think unless you're close to what that locker room was like, the attitude on this team and the lack of not only good players but guys where football is really important to, he really had to start from scratch. I mean, he could not have brought in a playmaker or a quarterback at that time because the team wasn't ready. And where they were drafted.
You can't force getting the quarterback.
You can't force that to go. You know, and so you look at the guys, you know, Evan Britton after his rookie year was outstanding. Beat up last year, back this year. I looked like he played pretty good at left guard. He's a right tackle. I don't understand that. I'd put him at right tackle. Nothing against Guy Wimper. You put Rackley at left guard. That's a different debate. Eugene has been average. He hasn't progressed to where I think we want him to be.
But in fairness
to him, after a terrible preseason, from what I've seen on the tape and then watching the TV copy, outside the hands of the face, which, trust me, I had plenty of hands of the face. It's unfortunate. Was it a bad time?
You didn't get a call back then, though. You used to do that to Bruce Smith. And I mean, I remember the first time.
That's legal.
The first
if they don't
time
call, if they don't throw
Tony
a flag,
Vaselli goes against the Green Bay Packers.
I punched Sean Jones right in the
you
mouth.
You could have gotten called 15 times hand for the face against
Not
Sean
15,
Jones.
Not 15, probably 10.
Okay.
But anyways.
12.
12. We'll negotiate. But my point is, Eugene's played well during the regular season. And he played well against Charles Johnson, who's a very good,
very good
defensive end. And everyone's going to say, well, he had the hands and face, and Johnson got a sack. Well, the sack that he got
wasn't his fault.
Was not his fault. Eugene had washed him, was staying with him. Blaine trying to step up in the pocket but stepped right under the rush, which is going to happen. That's part of it. And so I think Eugene is progressing. And is he a Pro Bowl left tackle yet? No. He has that ability, and I hope he realizes it. But that's a good, solid pick. That is a good position that you can lock down, that he's going to be there for 10 years if he doesn't get hurt.
But picking linemen – it is exactly the right way to build.
But it's not popular.
It's not sexy. It's not the popular thing. But I think Jeff's point's exactly correct. Build the base first.
You have to.
Blaine Gabbert's now here, which obviously everybody knows that's the pick that it's ultimately going to be, you know, why Gene's ultimately going to be judged on. And then next year you go the big play wide
and
out.
And then, guys, look at this defense last year. This defense was atrocious last year. And they had to rebuild that. And what they've been able to accomplish, yes, we don't have the pass rusher, but they thought Aaron would be back. And I got to tell you, Jeremy Bensy he's a guy who gets after it. Is he your dominant pass rusher? No, but you can play with him rushing the passer. You have two very good defensive tackles. Once Tyson gets healthy, he's going to be, I believe, dominant. I love Terrence. Terrence just got to decide to play every down like he can, and he can't be blocked. We have three very good linebackers. Dwan Landry is a solid top, you know, good. Is he a Pro Bowler? Well, maybe he can work into that, but at strong safety, a very good player. Rasheen's playing better this year. You got Derek Cox, who I think is a good corner. I mean, you have the pieces but you had so many holes that you had to rebuild that.
Right.
Are they a top five defense at the end of the year? Probably not. I still said, and I said at the beginning of the year, they're a top 10 defense. I believe that. I think they have the ability to be a top five run defense and a top 10 defense overall.
If you plopped an elite quarterback onto this roster, it's a very good team.
It's a 10 or 11 team win ball club.
Right now,
today,
you're waiting and you're watching for Blaine to develop into that, and that's the process.
I agree.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. We take this break for news at the bottom of the hour and return. More to come. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it. Bueller Swiss Watch Company is the official watch of the Jaguars. You can get your Bueller Swiss at Jacobs Jewelers in Jacksonville, Faceted Rainbow in Ocala, Lorraine's Diamond Tree in Middleburg, Treasures Fine Jewelers in Palatka, and J. Carbone Jewelers in Valdosta. Big thanks to the good folks at Seabest Seafood for once again coming through with the coconut shrimp and the
crab cakes, baby.
Yep, had a couple of those. Delicious
fish
seafood.
Sticks.
You can, and what was the, what do they call those, Joe? They're not just like fish sticks, but they're, all right.
They're big ones.
They're just not like the old little frozen
Captain
ones.
Yeah, that are like 75% bread and 25% fish.
These are like 95% really fish and a little bit of breading to cover it.
Very you nice. Can try it Sunday. They will be out on the Pepsi Pavilion there underneath whatever. They'll be there.
Bud Light Zone?
Bud Light Zone, exactly. The Bud Light Party Zone with all kinds of food for you, folks. So stop on by Sunday. Seabest Seafood. Look in your grocer's frozen food section. Let's grab a caller here, and then we'll continue on. Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna, only on News Talk WOKV. And Clay held through the news at the bottom of the hour. He's in Riverside, and he's on the air. Hello, Clay.
Evening, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. I have one comment, and then it's just a good open question that I'd love to hear your answer to. I guess comment is a little bit of frustration when you were talking to the last gentleman from Middleburg about the Gene's draft classes, and the first thing you said was, well, you know, Eugene starting and Evan starting and Derek starting. Well, you know, that's great, but it doesn't tell me much because they're starting for us. They're starting for a team that lost its last four games of the season last year and is 1-2 right now. So, you know, it just doesn't tell me very much. So then my question is, not based on expectations and not based on what you see in practice, but based on what you see on the field, the 2010 Jaguars face off against the 2011 Jaguars. What's the score?
Last year's team against this year? Is that the question?
Yeah,
I thought he wanted to know who the talented guys were, and we'd touch on that at the
end. Well, the defense is 1,000 times better this year than last year, so.
Which I agree, but I'd say this year's offense is so tepid, would they actually take advantage of that?
I don't know.
It's a hypothetical. Let's talk about the talent issues. I mean, let's talk about who's talented. Is Eugene Monroe talented?
Yes.
Is Evan Britton talented?
Yes.
Is Mike
when
Thomas
healthy,
talented?
When healthy, yes.
Is Terrence Knighton talented?
Yeah. Yes.
Is Blaine Gabbert talented?
Yeah. Yes.
Tyson Alualu. Yes, these are all talented guys. I mean, we don't even need to go there, Clay. These are talented players.
Okay. So, when are any of those gentlemen going to show up on any sort of, you know, Pro Bowl consideration?
Did
How
you
about
not
that?
Listen?
You got to win.
Clay.
Eugene Monroe was the top 10 pick.
Right.
Jason Smith was the second overall pick in
that
draft.
He was benched
last week.
Eugene Monroe is a better-than-average player in his third year.
And has potential to be a Pro Bowler.
And has been kind of leading the way for a back who's pretty good. So is Evan Britton.
Yep.
For the most part.
Fair enough.
Let's not forget about that, Clay.
By the way, Mercedes Lewis, in his third season, was thought to be a guy who still had a long way to go, right? Now he's a Pro Bowler. Some of this is development. Some of it's getting a quarterback out there. There's a lot of different factors that go into it.
It all looks better when the quarterback's playing
well. Yeah, I mean in this league, in this day and
age.
That's
so much of it right now. The defense is significantly better. I mean, Paul Posluszny, I don't know why we're talking about that, but he's playing fantastic. You know,
super high level. If he were to play coverage a little better because he's had a couple issues in coverage this year, if he didn't have those plays against him, he's playing at an all-pro level.
Right. It's so skewed based on the quarterback. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you Blaine played at a Pro Bowl level last week, but this is going to take time, and it's going to look choppy, and it's going to look like there's not talent in certain places until that gets better. And it's just going to take time.
And, guys, let's not use the Pro Bowl as the final barometer.
I was just going there.
Right,
because you made them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's the biggest thing that means nothing. But Fred Taylor made one Pro Bowler, and he's a pretty good player.
I was headed there. You can tell. Let the eye test, right?
Like, I think
you know who can play.
If I'm not mistaken, Aaron Rodgers was not one of the top was not one of the three quarterbacks last year for the Pro Bowl. So,
and
I think
Tom
we'd
Brady
all
has not been to as many as you would think. It's not always a fair deal.
Either of those guys. So.
And there's guys who played in the Pro Bowl who had no business. Vince Young, was he Pro Bowl? No. No, he went because guys got hurt. So you can't look at the Pro Bowl.
No.
Dave Grard went.
Yeah, and he threw 15 touchdown passes the year he went. So, I mean.
Well, that was the year, but.
That was 2 years ago.
In all due respect to David, 8 guys dropped out before.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I mean, that's why you don't look at the Pro Bowl. You look and you see guys who can play. And all, not all, but all the guys that we talked about are guys who can play. Just plain and simple, Clay. We appreciate your phone call, 355-NFL-1.
We just disagree with you.
Yeah, well,
it's amazing,
that won't be the first time.
It's amazing how when – perfect example. Look at the Indianapolis Colts. Look at the Indianapolis Colts.
Dwight Freeney's still pretty good if you watch Monday
night.
No,
I know.
Or Sunday night.
But you know what? How good – now, imagine them, okay, not having had Peyton Manning, and what would they be saying about Reggie Wayne right now?
Right.
What would they be saying about Austin Collie? What would they be saying about
Dallas Clark?
Even about the pass rushers?
They wouldn't have as many opportunities.
No, they wouldn't.
You know, the perfect example.
Although they were pretty dominant with no matter who played quarterback last week.
Jacob Tammy took over last year, if you remember, for Dallas Clark. I mean, Dallas just always bruised this team. I mean, they couldn't match up with him. At one point, Jacob Tammy, over a six-week stretch last year with Peyton Manning, all of a sudden, because he's in the lineup, has more catches for more yards than any tight end of the game.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's what the quarterback
does.
Well,
we've already started. We went through this with Wes Welker. It's the quarterback that makes the skill positions outside of the running back.
Well,
which
and
is
even
a direct,
the running back.
Yeah,
takes,
no,
it
can't help
takes
it. But
people
if
out
you
of
have
box.
A good running back and a good offensive line, you can run the ball in this league. And we've proven that with the guys we've had here.
That's
so
what makes Maurice's numbers?
Unreal.
Unreal.
I mean, I can make an argument about Maurice. He's the best running back in football right now.
Yeah, you could.
Without a doubt. I mean, and it would be very difficult for anybody to convince me I'm wrong.
You want the yards? Just real quick, here's the number. He has, since taking over the starting job in 2009, he's run for 3,022 yards. That's the second most yards since 2009 to Chris Johnson, who only has 3,468. So he's not that far behind Chris Johnson. He has 24 touchdowns since 2009, which is third to Adrian Peterson, who has 34. And Chris Johnson, who has 28. So he's right there with the top backs.
Okay, but forget those numbers.
Okay.
Turn on the tape.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
And watch.
Do the eye test.
I mean, at the end of the day, I'm with Jeff. It's, you know, you can give me all these numbers and everything.
Well, I'm just
turn
I'm
on, which I agree. They can support your argument, but turn on the tape and watch Maurice Jones-Drew run and compare it to the tape of any other running back that has run the ball in the last 2 or 3 years, just this year. There's not a better back in football than Maurice Jones-Drew. Okay. There's not. I see all the other teams.
Right.
You know, I watched LeSean McCoy last week for the Philadelphia Eagles. Unbelievable back. Dynamic.
Great back. But he ain't
Maurice. He's not Maurice Jones-Drew. You know, I can watch the highlight. Adrian Peterson, phenomenal player. Unreal. He's not as good as Maurice Jones-Drew. He's not. No, I'm sorry. No.
He's pretty good.
He's very good. You watch what Maurice Jones-Drew does and what they ask him to do on this team in the situations, the way we are structured in playing offense right now. And to me, it is remarkable
what he does.
What he does.
Well, he's run for more yards through the first 3 games than he has at any point in his career. And
he catches the ball. He's a better – the reason I would put him ahead of Adrian Peterson, he's a better back out of the backfield.
And he doesn't fumble.
He doesn't fumble.
You have featured his runs on the smart board each of the last 2 weeks.
He's amazing.
I mean,
I love it.
And so you asked the question.
He is probably in my, you know, I've been watching NFL football. I'm talking really close, you know, watching tape, you know, as a player and then as an analyst. Since 1989. And he is one of the greatest competitors I've ever watched. I mean, and I would put him as in –
Top 10
greatest competitors since that time.
I was asked a question yesterday. I did this thing at UNF in front of 100 or 200, a bunch of students, about interviewing. The question was, if there was any player currently playing, and they may even said past, but I took it as current, any player currently that you could play with, who would it be? And without hesitation, I said Maurice Jones-Drew. And that solidified in my mind the last 2 weeks as I've watched him play in very difficult situations especially we talked about this last week on the show, against the Jets, and watched him compete. Forget the numbers, forget all the talent that he has, and watched him compete. And I said, if I had to choose today, I would choose Maurice Jones-Drew to play football with.
355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. We take a break and return with one final segment of Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna on News Talk WOKV. Depend on it.
Stick.
All right, welcome back, Jaguars This Week. About 10 minutes left in the program. Is there anything left to say with respect to Jaguars, or can we move on and talk about some games around the NFL?
Well, just real quick, look into this game. Got to contain. You're not going to stop Drew Brees. Contain Drew Brees. Play great defense. This is where special teams are going to be very important. Field position, and you got to score points.
What's contain?
You got to get takeaways, man.
Yeah, that's what I mean. When I say contain, you got to you got to take away possessions from the Saints and get a couple extra possessions yourself to win.
And you realistically need a play that's not supposed to happen. You know, a turnover that puts you inside the five, and you get a touchdown.
You need to score on special teams, score on defense. You know, because can the offense score 35 points? You know, right now it wouldn't look like it.
Well, how could you say they've only scored 29 points this season?
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm trying to be
right.
So you got to score on special teams or defense and create some opportunities that are easy for your offense and take it away from the Saints team.
All right. Well, let's run through some of the games around the NFL this week. This one a month ago we would have said Buffalo at Cincinnati. I mean, Buffalo all of a sudden looks like 4-0, and that Fitzpatrick kid just keeps getting better.
In Cincinnati, they're 2-1, but they haven't played.
They've played in Cleveland. They've played in
Denver. I
think
they're 1-2.
No, they beat Cleveland.
They beat Cleveland.
And they beat the 49ers.
They lost in Denver. No, no.
Oh, they got beat the last second.
So they're 1-2.
1-2, excuse me. I forgot. They got beat the last second.
So they're playing. They've played three teams that have not made the playoffs.
And I think Buffalo beats them by two touchdowns.
37.7 points a game. Did you think they were that good when we saw them?
No, Buffalo's not that good.
But this is what they're that good.
This is the ultimate.
Okay, but guys, this is where I disagree.
Thinking they're good, going and losing to a team you shouldn't.
That's fine. That can happen. But Fitzpatrick is a real quarterback. He is the real deal. You watch
him.
And what he did when we played him, he throws the ball on time. He gets it out. He knows where to go with it. And I love the quote that I heard him make this week. He is the only profession in the world where going to Harvard is a negative. I mean, it's a great quote. I mean, you think about it, because the stigma of playing at an Ivy League school hurts him and how people perceive him as a quarterback.
Minnesota, Kansas City, two teams without a win. Ugh. Who gets it?
That's a family and friends game.
Yeah. Detroit, what do you mean by that?
That's the only people watching.
See, just to prove you can't tell, because we talked about Buffalo.
Honestly, that's an exaggeration, but
That's about right.
That's one of the games I used to do when I was at Fox, where you get the sheet the night before the game, and it shows that 1% the game's going to 1% of the of the country.
Right. Kansas City is the only team in the National Football League that has scored less points than the Jaguars.
Yikes. And you talk about a coach on the hot seat,
Haley, which is amazing
after what he did last year.
He was the flavor of the month last year.
You knew he was on the hot seat.
When Charlie Weiss left?
When Charlie Weiss leaves, Scott Pioli, something ain't right.
Well, I think the whole front office, Pioli, everybody's on the hot seat.
Yeah,
the whole organization right now is
they're hanging in the balance.
Yep.
Detroit at Dallas. All of a sudden, this is
good
a featured game.
Game.
Great game. I think Detroit is for real. And if you're a Jaguar fan, this is the patience that you have to have. The Detroit Lions 2 years ago, when Matt Stafford was a rookie,
now he's one of the highest rated.
Very erratic, up and down, beat up. Had another good draft last year with Ndamukong Suh. He was hurt though again. You know, fighting his way through. Now year three, you got a franchise quarterback. You do have a playmaker that we don't have in Charles Johnson. Calvin Johnson, and then obviously Ndamukong Suh.
Ndamukong Suh may break all of Tony Romo's ribs. I mean, he's a beast.
Yeah, I'll tell you this: if I was playing offensive line against him and you're game planning him, you slide to him the whole time. I don't even know
if it would help.
Well, the first play of the game, I tell you what you do: is you have a three-step drop and you tell your left guard or right guard, whoever he lines up on. You take one step back and you hit him in the knees as hard as you can. I mean, you cut him.
That's about it.
I mean, you have to make him think about something else.
Right.
And then you down block cut him and pull the next play. You run a G and you have the tackle down block and cut him and pull the guard.
Tony, you got to speak the language of the fans here. You know, you run the G.
Okay,
and,
well, you run an off tackle outside where you pull the guard and block right. your tackle down, and you block down on the three technique, which is the outside shade of the offensive guard where Ndamukong Suh plays, and you cut him again.
If anybody got that, call us.
Sorry. I apologize.
San Francisco.
But, you know, I mean, don't you agree? You have to take
no, – yeah.
You got to. You have to slow him down and make him mad and make him think about his lower body. Not that you want to hurt him. But
and
you want to think
matter.
It.
May not
and after all that, you're still probably going to hit your quarterback a few times.
San Francisco's at Philadelphia. Carolina's at Chicago.
Phil, that's an interesting game because with Michael Vick's hand, they're 1-2. They're reeling in the sense of their identity coming in was they're the dream team. They're the class of the NFC East. All of a sudden, they find themselves at the bottom of the NFC East.
And with San Francisco, what are they?
Well,
what are they record-wise?
I think I believe they're 2-1.
That's what I thought. Harbaugh's getting it done.
And well, yeah, but look who they
– They're playing just well
enough.
They
beat Seattle.
Yeah, yeah, but you know what? I don't care who they beat. I mean, team is
– They play with
guess
that,
what? Too. Without a quarterback and to get 2 out of 3 wins, I mean, that's pretty good.
And they're getting nothing out of the running game with Frank Gore either. He's banged up.
And they stayed east this week, you know, because they played in Cincinnati and won. They just stayed there in Ohio.
But that's – I'm telling you, I don't see San Francisco winning that game. It's going to be interesting.
Well, Philly's desperate, and it's tough to beat a desperate team.
Yeah, they're desperate. And
they're at home.
Yeah.
Carolina at Chicago, New Orleans at Jacksonville. How about Washington at St. Louis?
I'm doing that game this week.
Yep.
I'll be in St.
Rams
Louis.
0-3. I mean, we talked about they were a very chic pick.
Yeah, but I think
they're
in the division, the NFC West, where at 0-3, they're not out of it.
Right.
Now, what might cause them to be out of it, they have a lot of injuries. They're playmakers. You know, Amendola or whatever his name is got hurt early. He's out. Steven Jackson has the quad. It's you know you need him full strength to really contend. Bradford's playing well. They got issues on the offensive line. They benched their number two pick of Jason Smith. Defensively, they're just.
Which everybody didn't think he was top talent.
No. I thought from day one he was the worst of the tackles coming out.
And the Skins aren't bad.
And the Skins are not bad.
No.
And they're playing with a lot of confidence. And so, but again, Spagnuolo is a guy who had to meet with the owner last week, and you got to wonder how much rope does he have. It's a new ownership in the sense that he just they bought full control of the team. You know, you wonder how hot that seat's getting as well.
All right, let's go through a couple of these rapid pace. How about Tennessee at Cleveland? Tennessee's 2-1.
Yeah, like what Mike Munchak's doing after the opening week. You know, they came down here, got beat, and played very poorly.
They're wasting time.
With Hasselbeck.
I mean,
well, Hasselbeck threw for three. I mean, he.
Yeah, but you know what? Get to it.
Well, but why, Jeff? If Hasselbeck.
Lollipop arm.
Okay, lollipop arm, but he threw for 340 yards a week ago. Now, they're without Kenny Britt, that's going to hurt them greatly. But in the AFC South, in a division where you have Jacksonville struggling with an identity with their quarterback, you have the Colts who are 0-3 and going nowhere, and the Texans got exposed for what they are, a very average defense. With a good offense.
By the way, we got to talk about the Colts, so we'll jump ahead to the Monday night game. They're at Tampa. They lost Gary Brackett and Melvin Bullitt today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a season that was already a disaster is now
I don't care with those two defensive ends. You're in every game.
Yeah, that was as impressive. You know, I was a covered Freeney a lot. That was one of his top two or three games he's ever played. I mean, it was impressive stuff. And you know what? Losing Brackett hurts him, but as you said, their story is pretty much written.
All right, how about these other two games? We'll go back to 4:15 game, New England at Oakland.
I think it's a great
game. Game of the week.
Great game. I think Oakland's for real. Hugh Jackson, who I wondered if he could be a good head coach, is doing a great job. He's got those guys playing very well on both sides of the ball, and I think they give New England all they want.
Sunday night, Jets at Ravens.
Jets
Ravens win that because I'm not sure the Jets are that good.
Yeah, I worry about the Jets, and I know my good friend Mark Brunell didn't like this. I told him before the season I thought they were going to struggle this year because I'm not convinced that Sanchez is ready to be just the guy who can throw the ball.
No, he's
they
not.
Don't, and Sean Green is not the back they thought he was. He's not putting up the numbers. And they don't have a pass rush. They have no pass rush, so they have to create pressure that puts them in all kinds of binds. Now, they have the corners to do it, but still, you know, without a pass rush, I mean, we know what that means, and I don't care how good a coach Rex Ryan is, they're going to win more than maybe they lose, but it's going to be tough to beat a good Ravens team.
And that'll do it for the show. Jeff, Tony, John, Joe, thanks so much to all of you for listening. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you Sunday with the Sonny's Real Pit Barbecue Tailgate Show starting at 10 a.m. right here on News Talk WOKV. Good night, everybody.
WOKV AM Jacksonville, WOKV.